There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 718, January 22nd, 2017. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say welcome to the first recording of the new season. Massa in, Bernie out, and Chase is on.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, like you said, Bernie is officially out. Braun is in. Peugeot dominate Dakar. Ogier does it again in Monte Carlo. Pirelli says 2017 could be a processional year. And we have Tech Talk with Tim. And of course, F1 Weekly now available on WROCK Radio streaming. On WLOR.net, Wednesdays at 11 p.m. and Saturdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Nasser, welcome to the studio. How are you in this busy, busy motorsports news day?
I am ROC in the USA.
Me too. I mean, I am stunned on everything that's going on in the world, including Pirelli admitting that this could be Stinko year, but in the end, Pirelli should just say Fernando's going to win, and Lewis Hamilton will not win another world championship in 2017. But the big news of the day, of course, is Bernie Ecclestone, Ross Brawn, Liberty, and the Americanization of Formula One today.
Yes, sir. Bernie says bye-bye to the kingdom of Formula One. Liberty Media has made it official. Case Carey is the new head honcho of Formula One management, and the four-decade rule of Bernard Ecclestone is over. What say you, sir?
Unbelievable. Never expected it. I thought he would sit there even after death in the paddock. But apparently, Liberty, as he was waxing his mustache, said, Bernie, I'm sorry, but you are now out of us, emeritus, or whatever is.
Money talks and Bernie walks.
It is a beautiful thing. I can't believe it. But this could be for good news, really, for Formula One.
Well, you know, a lot of traditional motorsports media people were not happy with a couple of things. One was how CVC partners basically took billions of dollars from Formula One, never invested a dime. Their head man, Mr. Scott McKenzie, was not very popular with a lot of media. And now we're talking, you know, old, established, very respected media of Formula One world. And then, you know, Bernie never embraced, digital technology. I mean, he did the digital TV. But not in terms of, you know, like if you go to MotoGP website, it's far more, at least used to be far more ahead of Formula One. So I think Liberty Media being in the media, digital business, and if there's anything a big American company knows, and that is good marketing and how to make money, you know, they're not here for fun and games. So I think this has a very strong possibility of turning into a big. It may not be what you and I want. There may be more concerts, this and that. But as long as Formula One is made more popular, access is easier, and we have races in traditional places instead of Baku and Ulaanbaatar, I'm looking forward to the new era. But Bernie has done a great, great job. There's no question about it. But all good things must come to an end, except for F1 Weekly podcast.
Exactly. But you're right. All good things must come to an end. But let's hope it's not Formula One. And like you said, we did need a bit of a transfusion, may I say, of fresh blood.
Regime change.
Exactly.
And you know, the new regime has already announced some of that top lineup. Ross Brawn, who needs no introduction to racing fans, will be their managing director of motorsports. Very smart move, obviously. And former ESPN executive Sean Bratches will be their managing director of commercial operation, and ESPN is an icon in American sports and entertainment. So, you know, they're bringing in the right people. It's not like they're bringing in Kyle Busch or Danica Patrick to the table.
I agree. And the best part is they don't have to be confirmed by Congress.
Oh, God. Keep them out of this deal.
Thank you very much.
Or the British Parliament.
Exactly. So, no, I'm very excited. 2017 is going to be definitely the shake-up season for Liberty. They're going to be doing, they're going to be poking and prodding.
Yeah, and they will listen to a lot of people. You know, actually, they have even set aside $400 million. They want the teams to own some share of the pie, which I think is a good idea. And Liberty Media is headed by John Malone, who is a very well-known and well-respected in the American business arena. They also own, among many other things, Virgin Media and Atlanta Braves baseball team. And this is very interesting. Before the show, I was looking at their website, Liberty Media's website, and they have a 7% stake in a company called Saavn, which is an Indian music streaming service focused on Bollywood music. So here's the deal. Chase Carey can now appoint Bernie as the official snake charmer of Formula One. And if Bernie can charm Putin, why not a Burmese python?
Keep up the good work, Nass.
We're going in the jungles to bring the best in podcast, Clark.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
What else you want to talk about this breaking news?
Well, you know, I also saw on the forum of F1Weekly.com the great news that you have on your visit to Daytona, your setup with a certain individual who was obviously teammates to Fernando Alonso and Machismo. I'm excited.
Mexico, yeah, I got it. It's very nice. They responded very quickly. And they have I'm taking Friday off to be at Daytona. And on Friday, they have like a half-hour slot with meet the team, meet and greet the team for the media. So I'm not sure if it'll be like a you know, joint interview session or if I can get 10-15 minutes with Fisico one-on-one, which I've prepared some good questions. It will be nice if we can do that. And I also sent a request to Nick Heidfeld, will be there too. So I'm waiting to hear from his peeps.
Very exciting, Nasser. I'm sure once he sees the F1 Weekly badge on your shirt that they will be hustling you off to the back room with Fisico.
Oh, bravo, bravo.
Exactly.
I have to ask him, you know, is Fernando Alonso really that good?
Of course.
But, you know, going back to Formula One, this is interesting. You know, I love when people who are not winning start, you know, complaining. So the F1 season has not even started. And this is already a few weeks old now. But the B&N has preceded the preseason testing. We are talking about Ferrari's complaint to the FIA about the Mercedes concept of hydraulically network chassis. Now, I'm no technical guru, but FIA has informed the teams that this system is not legal. This is based on the system wearing the right height of the car, not simply to act as traditional suspension, but for aerodynamic effect as well. And I think this is like the second coming of the active suspension that Nando enjoyed once upon a time.
I'm beginning to smell expanding Michelin tires.
Yeah. Do you want to see expanding Pirelli tires?
There will be expanding.
Yeah, let's see what happens. And but, you know, I have to say, Clark, you know, people talk about pay drivers and procession and one team domination. I mean, most of the time since Formula One, it's been pretty much the same. You know, you have people who get a tremendous advantage, and then they win a lot of races. Everybody's trying to catch up. And I think, to me, that is the beauty of, you know, when in 88, 89, Honda was running away, Renault was catching up, and then they became the dominant factor, and then Ferrari came, and then Nando came, and then Red Bull came, and now Mercedes. So I think it's all good. People should enjoy the show instead of just complaining all the time.
I concur.
Now, and this is a sort of a sad, you know, I'll tell you, here we have mentioned a few times that what, like they do in American sports in NFL, is, you know, if you are a stinko team on season, next season you get the first draft pick, right? Or at least you have the right to do that.
Correct.
They should do a similar thing that, you know, the team, first of all, every team should get some money, not this lovey-dovey $30 million to Ferrari on top of, you know, anything and everything. And they should give X number of dollars to the team that is stinko of the season and give them X number of dollars and say, this is for you to run the GP2 champion of the preceding year. So this way, you know, they're doing something for their own. They call the GP2 official feeder series. And when was the last time you saw a guy come from GP2 and get into a top team? Apart from Lewis, which was, you know, a very different story altogether.
It's rare. I agree with you. But you have to think about it. You know, this isn't football. And I hate to see a championship-winning driver in GP2, you know, suffer and have to go to Manor, where he would rather be at Mercedes. And, of course, I guess you heard that Pastor Maldonado did think he had a shot at the Mercedes seat.
But does he have some tadpoles in his head? I mean, I don't know if he was talking about getting the Mercedes seat or just any of the falling crumbs. I mean, if he wants to go into Manor, wow, Maldonado at Manor, that's altogether a new program.
Yeah, they couldn't afford all the crashing.
But, you know, you're saying that you would hate to see the GP2. I mean, they have to start somewhere, you know. I mean, look at where Nando started.
I agree. Nardi.
Yeah. That's where Mark Webber started. Look at Senna, Tolman. You know, so you got to start somewhere.
Keep up the good work, Ness. You're absolutely right again.
Oh, I expect a bonus check, Clark.
It's on the way.
I'm still waiting for the Christmas bonus. It hasn't arrived. I don't know what happened.
It got screwed up in the mail.
Mm-hmm. In the Pitney Bowes mailing machine?
Correct.
Okay, so anyway, in Tales from the Crypt, Manor is going deep six. Their parent company has filed for bankruptcy, and time is running out. And our friend Rio will no longer be flowing in top tier of motor racing. And the mighty Silverstone, what do you think about this? That there was talk of Silverstone getting the axe, because now that Bernie is gone, they may have to drop this 5% automatic, I think 5% or 10%, I think it's 10%. You know, you pay $30 million to get a race, and automatically there's every year 5 or 10% increase in that cost or the fee. So I think they need to really even out this thing, you know.
Yeah, I know somebody who could renegotiate that contract.
Oh yeah, he's tearing up treaties, right?
Correct.
Yeah, that will be wonderful. We can have a Grand Prix day. Mar-a-Lago, that is palaces.
That's fine.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
And Donington has already said they don't want no stinking Grand Prix.
Yeah, Donington has been bought out by, or at least the lease has been taken up by, what is this called, MSV Company, Motorsports Vision, which is headed by Jonathan Palmer, who is Papito of Jolyon Palmer. And he owns Alton Park, Snetterton, and Brands Hatch. And he has done a very, very good job with all these facilities. And, you know, Mr. Brazier and I, and we have been there. And these are all very nice facilities now.
Indeed.
Yeah, it would be very sad to lose the British Grand Prix. I mean, that would be a complete disaster for Formula One heritage.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think it will happen. And now they're also talking to the British government, you know, to get a few quids in quickly. And, you know, do you think Manor will survive, or will they go the way of HRT and your favorite Caterham, whatever they were called?
Caterham and Super Aguri?
Oh, yeah, that was another beauty.
They could find a buyer. This is bargain basement. It's a great way to get in. It's easier than starting from scratch. Ask Haas.
Yes, exactly. They've done a very good job. And, you know, Pascal Wehrlein gave them a lifeline when he scored a point in Austria. But their fate, and this was even brought out by Stephen Fitzpatrick, who is the owner of Manor right now, that their fate was sealed when Felipe Nasr scored 2 points for Sauber in the showers of Sao Paulo. And the team has now basically a week or two to go. Apparently there is some Far Eastern group, most probably Chinese, in a position to take over. And another name that was linked, which was kind of surprised, but this man can do things because he knows the business very well, and he has a lot of racing success and connections and experience, and that chap was Ron Dennis. Do you think he will buy Manor?
No, Ron Dennis is done. He's out. McLaren is turning a new leaf. There's, you know, we'll see what the delivery of the car is. There's been chit-chat. It'll be orange. But how many times have we had this chit-chat in the past? I don't think it's going to be orange because that was the old color. They want a new color. So it's going to be dependent on their sponsorship, title sponsorship. So I know McLaren is going in a new direction. And, of course, Honda have admitted that they're going to copy the Mercedes layout for the engine. So I expect McLaren to be competitive. And even Renault came out and said McLaren did a fantastic job in 2016. So, Ron Dennis, you know, you don't go from McLaren to Manor. That would be backwards.
Yeah, that's very true. But I don't think he just wants to retire and pick up the dirt in Nice or BRH or wherever, you know, people with that kind of money can go. But we'll see. We'll see. I would like to see him come back in some sort of whatever role he can play with the team. But, you know, it's interesting about McLaren team, the ownership of this team. Teddy Mayer, who has now passed away, he was, you know, originally from Pennsylvania, a lawyer. And then his association with McLaren goes back many, many decades, with Bruce McLaren, that is. And he was pretty much the owner of the team, majority owner, I should say, after the death of Bruce McLaren. And then when Ron Dennis, along with his friend, Mr. Paul Hogan, who was the man writing checks for Marlboro, they sort of, you know, it was a case of the sponsor telling McLaren Formula One team to merge with Formula Two team called Project Four of Ron Dennis. And when, you know, these two got together, they squeezed out Teddy Mayer. And now karma has come full circle that Ron Dennis has been pushed out, squeezed out, and he has been replaced by an American man, Zach Brown, who started this very famous you know, company that became very big, just marketing. They really became the, on both sides of the pond, big gorilla of motorsports sponsorship. And actually, this guy, John Hogan, was one of his consultants or part owners of the business. If you remember, we interviewed Zach Brown some years ago at Laguna Seca.
I do remember.
And now he is in charge of McLaren. Fantastic rise and success for him. So we wish him all the best. And he's from Southern California originally.
Very nice.
Si, senor. Yeah, okay, you know, Rio Haryanto, who got the axe from Manor halfway through the last season, he's among the many talented young drivers we have interviewed from their junior days. And I had a brief chat with him at the U.S. Grand Prix in Austin last October. He was hopeful something will happen for him to return to Formula One in 2017. But now the Indonesian oil company Pertamina has pulled the plug on his sponsorship, and his mama has been quoted as saying he will now work in his Pepito's printing business. Highlight of Rio's racing life was winning the GP2 sprint races in 2015 at Bahrain and Red Bull Ring. His F1 career saw him race in the first dozen races of the 2016 season. 15th in Monte Carlo was his best finish in Formula One. And, you know, I talked to him about, I actually said to him, you know, for less than half the money that you took, that it will take to get a drive with Manor back for the bus, you can get into a pretty decent ride in IndyCar racing, which would have been much better for him, you know. And I see all these drivers who are good enough to make an impact here. They keep, you know, spending 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years in GP2, and that kind of money can buy them a very good. And here, you know, if you do a very good job, I mean, there's Penske Racing, there's Ganassi Racing, Michael Andretti Racing. There are some avenues and doors can open up for you. Just as people like Gilles de Ferran, Will Power, Gilles de Ferran, Tony Kanaan. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. But, you know, the printing business is not a bad business, Nasser.
Why is that? You can print your own ticket?
Exactly. And not only that, but I heard that he's already cut a deal that he'll be printing the brochures for Kamui Kobayashi's sushi shop.
Oh, yeah, in Tokyo?
Yeah.
Yeah, Kamui Kobayashi, I believe, is with the Toyota World Endurance Championship program, along with, you know, Kazuki Nakajima.
Isn't that lovely?
They're definitely with the limo this year. And, you know, talking of limo, man, I'm thinking of, I'm debating whether I should go to limo again or, you know, you will like this, Clark. I'm number one priority for me right now is to hit the streets of Po, because it's a week after the Spanish Grand Prix, and I would love to go to Po before I kick the Coleman bucket. And another reason to go there is this young English kid, Lando Norris, who I predict will be the next JB of GB, is racing in this series, and we have, you know, interviewed him last two seasons when he was in British Formula 3 and Formula 4. I think this kid is on his way to big league, and I wish him and everybody all the best. So I'd like to catch him up with him again, you know, in Formula 3 and also get... And you told me once upon a time that Mrs. Lincoln spent some time in Po after going to a theater in Washington, D.C.
Mrs. Lincoln.
Yeah, Mrs. Lincoln. What did I say?
I don't know. I think you said Bob Lincoln.
Oh, Mrs. Lincoln.
Yes, yes, she stayed in Po. You could go to the Mary Todd Lincoln Museum in Po.
Are you serious?
No. Am I ever serious?
Well, you are when you're talking about Nando.
That's very true, but that's a different museum in a different town.
Now, your homeboy, Stefan Peter Hensel, was the winner over his Peugeot teammate, Sebastian Loeb. Did you watch any of the Dakar Rally from South America?
Very exciting. Very, very exciting.
Yeah, it was very nice. I've always enjoyed this event. And it's amazing, you know, when it was taken from Africa to South America, it was a completely unknown factor, but given the landscape there, desert and all that, and of course the serious passion of, you know, Latin people, Latin American people, it's become a big success. So I'm very happy for the event. And talking of Latin people, our man Monty, Juan Pablo Montoya, won the individual champion of champions by beating Le Mans legend Tom Christensen in Miami in the annual race of champions. I had no idea where it would be on TV, so I did not watch it. And we don't have speed vision, so you cannot catch these things a week later. But did you watch any of that?
I saw some of it online. It was very, very fun until the accident. But I was happy for Vettel winning the cup for the Deutschland Uber Alles.
Absolutely. And he beat the Busch brothers. And we're not talking about George and the political brothers. We're talking about the racing Busch brothers.
The real Busch brothers.
Yeah.
Not Anheuser-Busch.
Yeah, there you go. And this was like, I think, I don't know, seventh or eighth time. I mean, Germany has won this thing many, many times now.
Yes, from Schumacher to Vettel to Vettel to Vettel to Vettel.
Yeah, very impressive. And I heard Pascal Wehrlein had a big crash. Is he okay, I hope?
Yeah, they told him he can't race anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But he can race in Formula One with Sauber, right?
Correct. That's a different kind of racing, you know.
Okay, shall we move on to a review of a look back on the 2016 season?
Of course, sir. The season where Fernando did not win.
That is true. Do you think he will win a race in 2017?
He will win the first race.
In Australia? Well, good for him.
Yep.
Yeah, well, it will be nice after his big bang past season.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah, that's the big comeback.
Yes. Okay, let's take a look here. GP2, 2016, of course. Champion Pierre Gasly, first Frenchman to take the title in what is called the official feeder series of Formula One. He is a Red Bull junior and would have made it to Toro Rosso if Kvyat was sent to the gulag by Dr. Marko. Gasly won the GP2 championship in his second attempt, winning four races at Silverstone, Hungaroring, Spa, and Yas Marina. Machismo man of the series was Italian rookie Antonio Giovinazzi. He won more races than Gasly and came close to winning the championship, opened a lot of eyes, and now is part of the Ferrari driver development program, which is good for him. Highlight of the season for Giovinazzi was winning both feature and sprint races in Baku, Azerbaijan. He also took victories at Spa, Monza, and Sepang. Both Gasly and Giovinazzi drove for the Italian Prema Power Team, and amazingly, it was also their first year for the team in GP2. And apparently, this team is now owned by Lance Stroll's Papito. He can buy anything on earth, you know.
Yeah.
So that's the way it goes sometimes. Okay, now look at the baby sister of GP2, GP3. Champion and rookie season was Charles Leclerc of Monaco. His three victories came at Circuit de Catalunya, Barcelona, Red Bull Ring, and Spa. He is also in good hands being managed by Nicolas Todd and his all-road management company. This season, Leclerc will race in GP2. This will be quite a challenge for him. Notable mention must be given to another rookie, Alexander Albon. He did a great job winning more races than Leclerc and was a contender till the final race of the season. He is half Thai and half English, which means his favorite dish in Mama's kitchen is bad fish, not bad Thai.
Wow.
He's getting the best of both worlds.
So beautiful.
Yes. Now we come to, this European F3 season, FIA is now behind it, so it's really becoming more and more important like it used to be. So we'll take a look at the 2016 European F3 champion. Total and complete domination by Lance Stroll in his second year in the championship. He won 14 of the 30 races, including final five of the season. He was driving for the same Prema team that also dominated the GP2 championship. And we already mentioned Pepito owns the team. Formula V8 3.5, the new name for what used to be World Series by Renault 3.5. And apparently they're going to change the name again this season. This is the series which till 2015 was known as World Series by Renault 3.5. The name was changed after Renault pulled the plug. Sebastian Vettel, Robert Kubica, Daniel Ricciardo are the big names to come from this series. And also Heikki Kovalainen was in this series. Tom Dillman, who is from same part of Francia as Sebastian Loeb, that is Alsace, won the championship in a very impressive race-winning performance in the final season finale at Barcelona. And I got to watch that on the web. Aurelien Panis, son of one-hit wonder Olivier Panis, also raced in this series. And like Dillman, took these in two races. We're talking of Alsace. Have you been to Alsace region of France?
Of course.
Oh, really?
It's the best. Colmar, Mulhouse, the Schlumpf Museum.
Oh, wow. Yeah, Mulhouse, whatever it's called. That's where the Bugatti factory was based originally.
And that's where the biggest Bugatti collection is.
Oh, really?
The Schlumpf collection.
They have. I've heard of that. And so it's very big in Bugatti collection there?
It's very nice. It's one of my favorite museums. I've been there a couple of times. And, of course, you have Colmar, La Route de Vin. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Okay, so now we move on to... This is a very important series because a lot of young kids out of... when they come out of karting, go into this series, Formula Renault Euro Cup. Bottas and Daniel Ricciardo raced there. Actually, interesting, the year Bottas won the championship, Ricciardo finished a few points behind him in second. Anyway, last year, Lando Norris from Bristol, England, we talked about him early in this show, not only won this very competitive championship, but also the NEC version, which is the North European countries, or I think it's called NEZ, North European Zone, something like that. In 2 years of single-seater racing, this kid has won 4 championships, and the future is very bright. So this season, he will move up to the European F3 with Carlin Motorsports. Of all the young drivers who are under 20 years of age, I think this is the most talented kid out there on the road to Formula One. And I was reading an article on one of the racing websites, and they had a list of about the top 10 or top 5 British prospects to replace JB and Lewis Hamilton, and they're also very high on him. And, we're high on drivers based on their results and performance.
Absolutely. Nasser, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back after this brief message.
Thank you, sir.
Thinking of a career in Formula One? Already have a motorsports job, but thinking about jumping into F1? Our team at Motorsports Career Advisor recently finalized the results of our interviews with several top motorsports recruiters and has compiled them into our 2017 Motorsports Resource Guide called The Number One Recruiter-Tested Method to Landing the Interview for Your Dream Job in F1. If you've heard our radio spots before, maybe you don't know that up to 1,000 action-oriented motorsports enthusiasts contact us every month to get our guides. But it was our motorsports recruiter partners that challenged us to go even further. And here's what they convinced us to do. For a limited time, we're giving away a pre-release sample of our 2017 resource guide, The Number One Recruiter-Tested Method to Landing the Interview for Your Dream Job in F1. Get yours now at F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com. F1 is extremely competitive. Be the first to see the guide and jump ahead of your job competition. Go to F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com now for the 2017 pre-release before the countdown expires, and you'll get a sneak peek at a guide that others will soon pay to receive. That's F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com.
Honesty is something we all look for, especially when it comes to auto service. Honest Engines Auto Service Tallahassee is where you'll find it. Since 2005, they've been delivering trusted, dependable service to Florida's capital. Honest Engines is your full-service auto repair center. Bumper to bumper, they have you covered. Honest Engines Auto Repair offers a variety of services. Transmission repair, oil change service, and much, much more. Don't let just anyone work on your car. Bring it to Honest Engines. They'll give your baby the care it deserves. They work closely with you to make sure you know what's being done. With Honest Engines, you don't have to guess what their team is doing. Their highly experienced and certified technicians know just what your car needs, and they'll make sure you do too. So if you're in the Tallahassee area and you need auto repairs, give Honest Engines a call, 850-421-8461, and tell them F1Weekly.com sent you. Honest Engines Auto Repair, right on the corner, right on the price, 718 Gay Street, Tallahassee.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And as the globe is spinning and continue to spin, Nas, please continue with your Motorsports Mondial.
Yes, sir. We're looking at 2016 champions. So we come to WRC World Rally Championship. Champion was your homeboy, Sebastian Ogier, for VW. He won 6 of the 13 events, including the opening and prestigious round Monte Carlo Rally, which he has just won this week also. This past weekend.
3 times in a row.
Yeah, this time driving for Ford. And also the famous Tour de Corse, also known as Corsica Rally. Now, have you ever been to Corsica, sir?
No, sir. It's an island. You have to take a boat.
Yeah, yeah. How far is it from the French mainland in terms of...
Not very far.
Yeah, it's a very... I could not believe they even used to have a... I don't know if it was a street race or a circuit... But they used to have Formula 2 or Formula 3 races there.
Of course, and they make good wine in Corsica.
I'm sure they do. And I read that, typical British humor, that one of the Matra models, the first victory or the first race for that car, you know, was at this track in Corsica. Hence the nickname of this car by the British press was Napoleon.
Everybody's a funny guy.
Thought you would like that.
Thank you.
Do you remember... There was a Tolman after the Falkland Wars. It was a heavy, bulky car.
Yes.
It was General Belgrano.
I remember. Everybody's a funny guy. That's fine. I can laugh as much as the next guy.
Yes. You know, you got to have humor in motorsports.
Especially when you drive a French car.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Okay. Talking of Corsica rallies, on a sad historical note, in the 1986 event, this rally took the life of Henri Toivonen and his co-driver Sergio Cresto, who was originally from New York. The previous year, Italian Attilio Bottega was killed in this rally. Both were driving at that time for Lancia. Now we move on to MotoGP 2016. Marc Márquez of Spain was the champion for the third time in 4 years for Honda. In Riders on the Move, Jorge Lorenzo has jumped from Yamaha to Ducati. The Dr. Valentino Rossi will stay with Yamaha. He had previously gone to Ducati, but that experiment was not successful. IndyCar racing, fairy tale win in his first attempt at the Brickyard for one of F1 Weekly's original friends, Alexander Rossi, in what was the 100th running of this great American sporting saga. So there you have it, and I'll look at some big champions from 2016, and of course the undisputed champion of motorsports media and podcasting remains Clark Rogers from NorCal.
Keep up the good work, Nas. And of course, I want to mention, you know, that IndyCar just recently signed a multi-year contract with Firestone so they can continue their loving relationship.
Yes, otherwise they will have a hard time getting tire supplier.
Well, I think they probably could have gotten Cooper or Hankook, but I think Firestone benefits quite a bit from the advertisements.
Yeah, it's good for them. And, you know, Firestone is owned by Bridgestone now. Has been for many years.
Has been for many, many years. Hence, not the American Firestone, but is now Nippon Firestone.
There you go.
Thank you. So, no, very good. That was a good little review of 2016, and of course now we have 2017. F1's going to be interesting, but before I get into that, let's bring in Tech Talk with Tim.
Hello listeners, happy off season and welcome to Tech Talk episode 20. Last time we spoke about material science and how material scientists produce a menu of materials with different properties to choose from. A mechanical engineer is keenly interested in this menu, and he or she uses different materials along with different shapes to design machines and structures. A mechanical engineer must always be aware of the potential failure modes of a design. One such failure mode is bending. Think about a metal beam being bent into a U-shape by various forces. As the beam is bent, it begins to form a curve. The metal at the top of the beam is being pushed together, called compression, and the metal on the underside of the beam is being stretched apart, called tension. Too much tension or compression and the metal can fail. One way to prevent overstressing the beam is to use a stronger metal with a higher strength. Titanium beats aluminum, and steel beats them both. But if weight's critical, it's not hard to see why using a material with a high strength-to-weight ratio is crucial here. But another technique to improve the beam is to change the geometry of the beam. Instead of using a rectangular beam, what if material is redistributed to the top and bottom edges of the beam to help resist the high compression and tension as the beam begins to curve? This beam would be more effective against failure and bending. And if you think about this shape, with most of the material at the top and bottom, you've just created an I-beam. The prevalence of I-beams in mechanical engineering, civil engineering, and architecture speaks for itself. Another form of mechanical failure is overstress due to twisting, or torsion. Here's a good example. Take a paper towel tube and try to twist it. It's pretty stiff. But now cut down the length of the tube. No real material has been removed, but the part geometry went from a closed tube to an open C-channel. This has huge implications for carrying torsional loads. Try to twist this new tube. It's basically useless. So it's clear that closed sections are preferable to open sections. But sometimes other factors dictate the need for an open section. Case in point, the F1 monocoque. Without a hole, the driver can't enter or exit the car. But making this hole as small as possible and stiffening the opening helps. This stiffened design will, of course, be heavier. A mechanical engineer must be aware of many more modes of failure than purely structural means. For example, consider the expansion of materials under temperature increases. The F1 technical regulations list a number of permitted and prohibited materials for different parts of the car, including the engine. Aluminum is permitted as a cylinder head material, and steel is permitted for the valves. For each degree in temperature increase, aluminum expands about 2.5 times as much as steel. So as the engine heats and the cylinder head heats, the bores in the cylinder head will expand faster than the steel valves. Keep in mind the purpose of an engine valve is to open and close bores in the cylinder head. This difference in expansion rate can cause small gaps to form between the closed valve and the cylinder head. We're talking gaps on the order of thousandths of an inch or hundredths of a millimeter. But despite the small sizes of these gaps, they can have enormous negative consequences if hot, combusted gases leak out of the cylinder bore. Therefore, F1 engine parts are sized to work properly at the operating temperature of those parts. All the gaps close up when an engine is at operating temperature, hundreds of degrees above room temperature and much hotter than the temperatures experienced in road cars. But the parts are not correctly sized while the car sits at room temperature. So an F1 car cannot just be turned on like a road car. Instead, hot fluids need to be pumped through the car to bring the engine to temperature before it can be started. This also brings the engine oil to the proper temperature, and therefore the oil will have the proper viscosity, which is essential to reducing engine friction and wear at sub-operational temperatures. I can say from personal experience that mechanical engineering is a fascinating field that covers a wide spectrum of topics. I've already mentioned the design of structural beams, part sizing, thermal expansion, and selection of materials. Mechanical engineers are also generally familiar with aerodynamics, although an F1 team will have separate engineers working on mechanical and aerodynamic disciplines. Regardless, a mechanical engineer needs to speak the language and balance the needs of engineers with oftentimes vastly different priorities to create a car that can operate on a variety of tracks in a variety of weather conditions, and of course will be robust to driver error to a point while still being competitive.
Tim, thank you for another outstanding piece of educational material. Ness, that kid is a wonder kid.
Yes, you know, and here's a shout out to a mate in Australia, Loosh. You know, we are waiting for more Loosh on the Loose segment. If you are interested, please send us a file. Topic of your interest, and whatever you want to say, send it away.
Not only that, but we invite anybody who has any kind of topic that they would like to put on the show, whether it's trivia, criticism, anything. Record a quick 5-minute piece, and bingo, you send it to moi, and we will put it in to the program. Of course, it's a family program, so no foul language.
So Sebastian Vettel cannot send an MP3 file?
Correct. That's why we don't do Sebastian Vettel on this program. We have the moms and the children. So, but anyway, I'm excited. You really have to come through with this physical interview now, because I'm all excited.
Well, you know, it all depends on the availability. That's the whole thing. But I will be there all Saturday also.
Well, Nasser, let me tell you one thing. There's not a long line of people waiting to record physical in the United States.
Well, that's very true.
So, physical, Heikki Kovalainen, all those people are available.
No, quite a few people are there. You know, Nick Heidfeld is there, and Canadian kid, Bruno Spengler, who has done a very good job, actually won the championship for BMW some years ago. He lives in Strasbourg with his grandma, and he's originally from Canada, French-speaking Canadian. So it would be nice to catch up with some of these people. And, you know, our friend, Mr. Harry Tinknell, who actually will be racing for the Ford program in sports car racing, he sent me an email. He'll be there on Wednesday. And of course, he is managed by Alan McNish, so I will get to meet these two youths also. So really looking forward to it. It's very good to be at a racing track, and I feel fantastic. And this Daytona track is absolutely fantastic facility, very, very fan-friendly. And just like at Indy, you know, I always enjoyed going to the track, good people there, so it enhances the experience.
It does, and very good hot dogs.
Yes, and Cracker Barrel. I was going to do Cracker Barrel with Chris, our friend in Louisiana, but he's not coming this year, so hopefully we'll do a rain check for Cracker Barrel for next time.
Thank you, and Cracker Barrel sends their condolences. Now, of course, with all these changes in Formula One, Bernie gone, Ron Dennis gone, it's going to be interesting, and of course we're going to have the releases of the cars coming up in the next few weeks.
I think the cars will look very good. I just have a feeling.
That's what I have a feeling about. I heard they look super bad.
Yeah, and I think Mercedes will still have an edge. May not be as wide or as big as it has been, but who knows, they can surprise us again.
Of course, you know, Ferrari still had an edge when Renault and Fernando were fighting Ferrari. Then came Imola and Machismo, and that edge was slowly cut away.
Yeah, and I think that was really the battle of tires, you know, Firestone versus...
That's very true. And we miss those days. Some people don't like tire wars. I particularly do like them. But I think we're going to have a very interesting season. Unfortunately, Pirelli coming out, of course, now the degradation on the tires is going to be very low. They're going to be able to attack at full force. They're saying that if... You know, it's going to be top teams up front and everybody behind, which is normal. But they say it's going to be very processional, and I'm hoping that's not the case.
And, you know, talking of Formula One, in the European media, there is, in the Danish and French language, there is a war of words going on. between Kevin Magnussen and Cyril Abitbol of Renault. Apparently, Cyril Abitbol is like one of the head honchos of Renault Formula One program right now. He said that Kevin Magnussen, I was very surprised because I remember when Kevin Magnussen came, he was asked what can he learn from his dad's experience, and he was always talking about, you know, how to take things seriously, this and that. And Cyril Abitbol apparently told a French news magazine or whatever that he was not committed and he's not, you know, he's not focused and stuff like that. And obviously, Magnussen has come back and saying that, you know, that's just one man's opinion, doesn't mean the whole team thinks that way. So it's interesting. I was able to pick this up on ItaliaRacing.net, and then, you know, thanks to wonders of technology, you can click one button and get this thing translated. So pretty interesting reading there if somebody wants to do a little Googling on it.
Well, what's interesting is that all this news that's coming out is just now hitting the fan. And as we speak, Autosport's got Braun returns to F1 in senior Liberty role, Eccleston's exit as CEO, and of course, Kevin Magnussen is stunned himself that he has this bad boy reputation.
Yeah, he's a very good racer. You know, I was very impressed how he was able to come back in the second half of the British F3 when he was fighting with Felipe Nasr for the championship. And if I remember correctly, they both won the same number of races, Felipe winning the championship. But he really needs to, this would be his like third go in a team, third different team, and I would like to see him do well, you know.
Absolutely. Now, of course, the big topic is they're saying Formula One's going to be much more fan-friendly, like the American NASCAR series, where you really have access to everybody in the paddock, the cars and what have you. I don't know if they're going to go that far, but it's going to be very, very interesting to see how they're going to Americanize it. And I think a lot of Europeans are hoping for that too. A lot of Europeans love the way NASCAR is covered and spoken about and the openness about it, the boogity, 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 let's go ration.
No, I will tell you this, in speaking to a lot of drivers, industry people, racing people, not all of them racing drivers, but, you know, we have interviewed different people from marketing side and senior people also, and you ask them about the racing season, racing scene in America, one of the things that they always talk about how open and how fan-friendly it is, and I think that they really need to do something like, I mean, nobody would expect Kimi Raikkonen to have a cappuccino with 1,000 fans, but if they can do every one race, one team drivers are available to sign autograph for 40 minutes or 30 minutes, and they can do a, like, you know, first 200, 300 fans who line up will get the slot. And like the interviews they used to do, you know, Bob Varsha and David Hobbs at Indy, you know, that was fantastic, you know, to bring 3-4 drivers and they would even take questions from fans. You remember that, though, right?
Of course I remember. I don't have complete dementia, just a little bit.
Yeah, so they need to do a few things like that. And, of course, you know, this nonsense of... I was looking at the ticket prices of the Monaco Grand Prix. My God, man, talk about some guy going with his wife and two kids.
Yeah, but the reasons those tickets are so high is Monaco wants to keep the two kids away. They want just swingers and happening hips people.
No, you know, it should be, there has to be some portion of it has to be for the, you know, average Joe Blow who is a dedicated race fan.
I understand, but Monaco is for the Flavio, the Mancini, the Bravissimo.
Yeah.
So, it's going to be very interesting. And the other side of the story, and you were talking about how what they need to do in Formula One. Well, this is what I think they need to do. We need to be able to drive into Oklahoma and see a Chevrolet dealership owned by Kimi Raikkonen.
Kimi Raikkonen Chevrolet, yeah, that's a good idea.
That's a great idea. You know, Fernando, Alfa Romeo, right there.
Here is the problem if there's Kimi Raikkonen Chevrolet. They will lose market share because there will be no advertising. You know, the man says nothing. That would be his official policy, no ads.
No, but in America, we could do lip syncing.
There you go.
Thank you. We can get all that taken care of. That's what's so beautiful about America. Now, on the other hand, NASCAR is revealing they are having sweeping format changes.
Wow, man, are you turning into a NASCAR fan?
I mean, well, not only that, but see, as Formula One starts turning into Le Formule 1 with open paddocks and everything, NASCAR is going the opposite, and I heard they're hiring Bernie to tighten the ship up. They want to get rid of phantom debris, phantom cautions, phantom shoes on the track.
I think the France family has not been made aware of his comment about the Phoenix International Race Oval. You remember what he said?
Yes.
Yeah, so wait till they find that out, and then that will be the end of burning in NASCAR. But going back to this F1 thing with Liberty Nation and all that, one thing is for sure, I will not be surprised if... See, now Liberty Media runs the show. They can do whatever they want. I am fairly certain that we're going to see another U.S. Grand Prix within 2 years.
Oh, absolutely. I think we're going to have more of a... Well, I think Texas is a good spot, but we need one on the East Coast or one on the West Coast.
Yeah, I think what they will do, since being in the business of media and entertainment, they'll take it to Vegas. But I would love to see it in Miami. It will be a huge, huge crowd if it's in Miami, New York, New Jersey, or anywhere in California.
How about San Francisco?
San Francisco may not happen because of the cost and the city and the people there, you know. But I think New York City is a possibility, and Miami, they've had history of having a lot of IndyCar races and sports car races. Hopefully Ralph Sanchez is still alive and kicking and doing well.
I think Vegas is the best bet, because in San Francisco there's just too many tree huggers to allow race cars running through the city. That's just not going to happen. Las Vegas, it's perfect. They want the Oakland Raiders. We can give them the Oakland Raiders and a Formula One race.
You know, I think, you know, Long Beach would be best, street race in Long Beach, and then or Miami. That would be fantastic. But I'm looking forward to a second U.S. Grand Prix.
Absolutely. And, of course, I think Austin is... they did a great job last year with... what's her face? Shake it off! Shake it off! You know, that brought in 80,000 fans, and there happened to be a race at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think we're gonna see more of that. That was a great sort of intro to what Liberty really wants to do.
Yeah.
So, very fascinating. And I just can't wait to see cars in Barcelona.
Yeah, very, very good. Me too.
I mean, it's going to be exciting. And what we want to see is Red Bull and McLaren right at the front.
Well, I'm really looking forward to see how the rivalry develops between how good Bottas really is. And
well,
it's a great opportunity for him.
I know it's going to be a great opportunity for Bottas, but you have to feel for him a little bit.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, it's going to be tough. Even when LCH has a bad day, it's going to be tough. But on the other hand, he has... You know, there's that margin where he knows, and everybody knows, Lewis has been there for a while. He's just the new boy in town. So everybody's going to say, oh, give him a chance. You know, let's wait and see what happens. But by the time we get to Albert Park, let me put it this way. If he's not right next to Lewis Hamilton on the first row or the second row, if he's not nipping at Lewis Hamilton's heels, there will be a problem.
Yes, that will be a huge problem, especially if it carries on by the time the circus gets to, you know, European mainland.
Oh, then it's over.
Oh, yeah, it will be, because he has a one-year contract. And but, you know, another thing is that very nice kid, I have to say. I was so impressed by him, how humble he was when we last met in Spain during the preseason testing. The another thing I'm really looking forward to see is... how the performance of Lance Stroll will be compared to his teammate.
Who's his teammate?
Felipe Massa.
Oh, yeah, that should be very interesting. Well, it's going to be a new car, and Lance Stroll has to blow Massa out of the water. Simple as that.
Yeah, but he was really quick and but very wild in his first year in F3, and I just don't want to see this kid putting so too much pressure and start kind of like going over his head, you know.
I know. But these young drivers, you know, the opportunity is there. If you don't grab it, you're going to get passed up.
Well, nobody's going to pass him up because Pepito has enough money to arrange 20 days of testing in a Formula One car, in a two-year-old Formula One car, so they can, you know, buck the rules and regulation. Incredible way to get into Formula One. But the kid is quick. There's no question about it.
I know. Okay. So there you have it. And we'll go back to predictions. As you know, I expect Fernando to win in Melbourne with the new designed split turbo copying Mercedes. The Honda package is going to be dominant and fast. So I say Fernando on pole. What do you say?
I think the winner will be either Lewis Hamilton or Daniel Ricciardo.
Wow, you're really going out on a limb, Nass. I like that. You're a professional, but you keep it tight.
Yes.
So thank you. And there you have it. It's going to be exciting. And on the next podcast, we'll be seeing cars.
Yes, sir. When is the first rollout?
I don't know. I don't know nothing. I see nothing. But it's coming up very soon, early February.
Yes, sir. I look forward to it. And I thank everybody for listening for the past decade and hope we keep going strong for the next 10 years, sir. Now we have outlasted the Renault F1 podcast and we have outlasted Bernie Ecclestone.
That is saying a lot, Nass, but keep up the good work for that little notation on Bernie. I appreciate it. And of course, you're going to Daytona. Make sure you get a full report for everybody. And when you speak with Fisico, make sure you give him my regards.
I will, for sure.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Nasser. I want to thank everybody who listens. Good night.
Thank you, and bye-bye.
Complicated man, but no one understands him but his woman.